Good evening and welcome to another edition of Bird Calls from the Knoll Foundation Studios here at Red River Radio. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And tonight we ask that you call in with your questions at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Our show may sound a little different tonight, not too much, as we do have a Cliff here with us, but Wally Derleth is still our only phone person, as we are still trying to keep social distancing with our volunteers in place. So if you happen to call in and it kind of rings a little bit, give Wally a break. He's trying to handle all the calls at once. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he's ready to answer your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has held since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the first author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M Press, and he has authored more than 80 publications on birds and birding. He and his wife, Julie, and their two children live in East Texas. Cliff, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Bill. And when you mentioned Wally's the only one working the phone bank, you said the lonely phone bank. I thought, gosh, that would make a really cool bluesy song. Someone needs to write a bluesy song about Wally and the lonely phone bank.
All right, blues artists, get out there. Come on, get on it there, yeah. Wally's Lonely Phone Bank.
Yeah, there you go.
Give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 with any questions you have. And if you do have a photograph of a bird, we might not get to it tonight, but you can send that to my email address. That is wbeckett@lsus.edu. That's WBECKETT at lsus.edu. And Cliff, as always, at the end of last month, you gave us a conservation tip. And can you refresh our memories?
Yeah, we talked about roadways and good vehicle use and vehicle maintenance are good for not only your pocketbook, but good for birds. We know that, you know, removing excess weight from your vehicle and maintaining proper air pressure to your tires means you'll get better gas mileage, saves you money, and it's good on fuel emissions. So it's good for the environment. The roadways, we have to really watch out for critters along the roadside. You know, there's a lot of deer and hogs at night that can jump out in the road and get hit, and then the next day they're covered in vultures. In parts of the U.S., you can have other species like crested caracara will feed along both species of vultures we have. We have black vulture and turkey vulture. And there, I've even seen bald eagles feeding on roadkill. So I guess they get a little tired of eating fish all the time. Who wouldn't? But it'd be good to have a little variety. But that's a big problem for the birds that then get flushed along the roadside. So watch out for critters along the road, especially our birds. Owls feed along the road. They sit on one side of the road, see something tasty like a rodent on the other side, and fly low across and don't see that vehicle coming. So please watch out for critters along our roadside. This is where I would want to ask you, Bill. You know, one thing we talk about, the commercial for donating your unwanted vehicle to your local NPR station. And you all do that here at Red River Radio.
Absolutely. You can go on our website and find out information over in the right-hand column. There's actually a link to all of the information that you need. You know, if you'd like to donate a used vehicle, you get a tax write-off for it. And, of course, the money goes to help Red River Radio. And we've had quite a few of those over these years.
So if you're tired of driving, you don't want to hit wildlife, get rid of your vehicle and donate it to Red River Radio. But, yeah, roadways are dangerous. About half of all Texas public land is in a right-of-way. And we hear about people saying we ought to restore the native flora in our rights-of-way. But that's like building a playscape for children. It puts wildlife in harm's way.
Yeah, right in the middle of a highway.
Yeah, so you really want your rights-of-way to be very neutral. And that's why you see short grass so people can see wildlife that are, you know, trying to cross the road. It's also good when someone drops a cigarette out, but you kind of want that. You don't want to attract wildlife to the side of the road because it'll be just a matter of time that they get hit. And speaking of deer getting hit, my agency, Texas Parks and Wildlife, in my early days, way before internet and Twitter and Facebook, people would call the department saying, I hit a deer, what are you going to do about it? You know, they think that they can call their wildlife agency and get reimbursement or come out here and get out of the way. Well, first of all, in Texas, all wildlife belong to the people of the state. So it's not the department's deer that you hit, it's everyone's deer. And so it's like if you hit anything, it's your responsibility. So, but you cannot collect a deer that you've hit on the road. You've got to first call the local game warden and report it if it's super fresh. If it's been sitting there 3 days, don't report it. Nobody wants it. But if you're sitting there with a broken down car and the deer is right there, call the game warden because they can often donate that meat to a needy cause.
Right. And so.
But be careful of wildlife along our roads. It can be dangerous.
All right. We do have one caller online, and I'm going to ask Jennifer to hold on for a second because we've got to get through our profile species for this month. So, Cliff, what do you have for us?
This month's profile species is a woodpecker known as the northern flicker. Let's listen to their most common call here.
Hear something else in the background too.
There's some other birds and vehicles. It's a real loud clear, and this is a woodpecker that's larger than a robin, larger than a blue jay. Their flickers are often found foraging on the ground where the grass is short, like mowed lawns, parks, and golf courses, or in heavily grazed pastures. In these settings, the species feeds on native species of ants and other invertebrates. When flushed, watch for the big white rump patch. They also eat a wide variety of fruits, and when available, acorns and insects found up in the trees. In the eastern U.S., including here in the southeast U.S., this bird is sometimes known as the yellowhammer or the yellow-shafted flicker because of the bright yellow found on the underside of both the tail and wings. In the western part of the U.S., the same species shows a salmon red color under the tail and wings and is often referred to as the red-shafted flicker. Both the yellow-shafted and red-shafted flickers are the same species collectively known as the northern flicker. In areas of range overlap, the two races interbreed, creating all sorts of interesting-looking individuals. Males of the yellow-shafted race sport a black mustache, while that mark is lacking on the females. Both sexes have a small red patch on the nape, a black bib, and heavy black spotting on the belly. This is a highly migratory species of woodpecker, with few pairs remaining in the Red River radio listening area during the breeding season. Most overwinter with us, appearing here in late September through early October and staying through to late March or early April. To see a photo of a northern flicker snapped by James Childress, please visit the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org.
All right, and you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we have Jennifer online from Leesville. Jennifer, you're on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Well, I have two questions. The first one is, do you call a group of robins a flock like you do generalized birds? Do they have another name? And the second question also has to do with robins, because I'd like to know what to call that huge group that has been appearing in our front yard or our side yard, more like a field, for about the last week. More robins than I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, and in Nacogdoches, where I live, we have been just seeing tons of robins. I've looked online. On some of the birding listservs, people are talking about it in central Texas. I think what the commonality is the latitude. And so if you draw a line roughly from Leesville across to Nacogdoches, across to Waco, Austin area, that's where all those northern birds have come down. They're looking for fruit. They're looking for all these kinds of berries. They're usually in and out pretty quick. They can strip those trees, hollies and black cherry and ligustrum, and which is not native, and many other species that have berries right now. They can strip those along with cedar waxwings pretty quickly. Now, one thing about the robins, they'll also, you'll see them feeding on the lawn where yeah. they're going for earthworms and other insects and other invertebrates. But the term flock is correct. You know, all those other terms you hear of, those are usually literary terms, like a murder of crows.
Right.
Those are not ornithological terms. Those are literary terms. Those are what your Shakespeare's and of the world will use those terms more than your Audubon and your Roger Torrey Peterson's would use. So is that covered? Did we cover everything that you asked about
you
robins?
Did. Okay. You did. Okay, so a flock of robins, and they're eating earthworms and finding berries, and they'll probably be gone. I mean, they're interesting to look at.
Yeah.
Don't remember in years past, they're cheery little birds, but I don't remember in years past seeing this many. I mean, is there an upswing?
This is cyclical. I mean, you can go a few years and not see many groups, big flocks, and then all of a sudden it's a year like this. It's a banner year. And so they're kind of wandering around that. They're not going to sit around long if there's no food. They are actively foraging. They have to get calories. They have to stay warm from those calories. So they're not just playing around. They are busy eating. They're foraging. And if they move on, it's because they've stripped the berries and they've cleaned the lawns, and the flock moves on, and they're going to move to a different part of the country. But most of these birds, it's hard to tell. You can't look at a bird and see where they're from. But this is the number one most abundant bird in North America. It estimated is 380 million individuals, the American robin. And they have a huge breeding range. That's why they're number one in numbers and abundance. But probably a lot of our birds bred in southern Canada and the northern U.S. So you could be looking at birds that bred in Alberta, Saskatchewan, North Dakota, Minnesota, who knows? But they were not local birds. These are birds that have escaped cold winter, that's snow-covered. They can't find stuff in the snow. The berries are long gone. They took care of the berries. So they have to come down here. Same reason a lot of our water birds, like ducks, come down here. When those waters freeze up north, that pushes waterfowl south to where we have waters that don't freeze, and that's what you're seeing, the terrestrial version of that with robins.
Well, it's thrilling to see them.
Yep,
it's always thrilling to see them.
And we love that bird so much that my wife and I named our only daughter Robin. So we clearly like that bird. And I tease my daughter; she's a teenager in high school. The Latin name is Turdus migratorius. So we tease her that she's the migratory something something. So
yes. No. Not while they're in high school.
No, she doesn't. She rolls her eyes and then goes back to whatever she was reading or listening to, and rolls her eyes at good old dad.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Well, I think we should call him a ribbon of robins, so
yeah,
I can be literally here, you know. So a murder of crows and a gaggle of geese.
Right.
And what are the other ones? I can't even think of all of them. You are listening to Bird Calls with our ornithologist Red River Inn, with our ornithologist Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. Don from Henderson, Texas, you are on with Cliff. What's your question?
Cliff, I'm not sure if my question is an avian question or an amphibious question, but I live at the edge of town, and there's a wetland pasture next to a bottom of the river area.
I can hear the frogs in the background if you're calling about all the spring peepers.
Well, what are they? Spring peepers?
Yeah, those are frogs.
Well, I knew they were frogs. That's why I figured this was more of an amphibious question.
Yeah.
I got a dog barking next door too, and so those are spring peepers,
right? Yeah, like jeepers creepers peepers. So I can hear him in the background of the call, and when you said amphibious, I figured that's what you're calling about. So it's pretty loud that I can hear it over the phone, through the radio.
So those aren't chirping tree frogs.
No.
Okay.
So these are, you know, a lot of the herps, amphibians call throughout the cold months. It surprises some people to realize that. But I think if you start paying attention, you'll hear a lot of stuff singing herp-wise. You'll hear a lot of southern leopard frogs and calling the spring peeper. The upland chorus frogs will be calling soon. And the bronze frog. So, yeah, there's a lot of neat frogs. And the good thing is there's not as many frog calls to learn. They're pretty easy to master in any given area in the temperate zone here in the U.S. Now, if you go to a tropical zone, you go to, you know, the equator down in lowland, it's a different ball game. But anyway, so Don, that's what you got. You have a herpetological question, but we're happy to cover that here on a Bird Calls episode.
But there's one more sound
okay.
that I was really specifically calling about, and it's a quacking kind of a sound that must be some kind of a frog. And I hear it at night along with the killdeer sometimes, but it's kind of like a wah, wah.
Yeah.
And what kind of a weird thing is that?
That's probably the southern leopard frog. And you can look him up. And there are a lot of these calls online. My agency has a watch program, Amphibian Watch, and we have a lot of the pictures of these critters and a link to the voice so you can hear them. So look up southern leopard frog when we hang up, and look up spring peeper, Don. I think you'll be happy.
Thank you.
Appreciate okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Don. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I wonder if herpetologist calling would be a, you know, I don't
yeah.
trying to think about that one.
It would be very seasonal.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, kind of like the bugs.
A lot of slithering snakes.
Yes.
So, all right, we've got calls online. Randy from Cleveland, you're up next. David from Nacogdoches, please hang on. We're going to Randy next. And Randy, what's your question?
Okay, I'm actually in Cleburne.
Oh, Cleburne.
Okay.
They typed it wrong, and I said it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I know where Cleburne is, that down there near Fort Worth, up there near Fort Worth.
South of Fort Worth, about 30 miles.
Yep.
And the other day, I don't know where I was traveling, but it was in a little town called Keene, which is on the outskirts of Cleburne, and there was a bar ditch, and it was full of these birds, medium-sized birds, and they had a big orange beak, probably about 3 or 4 inches long, and they were like brown, and their feet were like webbed like duck's feet, and they were had an orange color to them as well. So I go and try to look it up, and couldn't find it, but my son, I was telling him about it, my son found them. And it's like a oyster catcher. So we're looking, and it's like a coastal bird, but we're a long way from the coast.
Yeah, you're not going to find you're not going to find even one oyster catcher in the Cleburne area. That is a coastal bird, and they don't really get into big groups like that. So I don't know. I mean, before you started doing the color, I was thinking killdeer. But then your colors didn't really match. It's a shorebird like the oyster catcher, and it's the one that would be expected, and they get in groups, and they're everywhere. So I would look up killdeer, but no way oyster catcher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an orange beak. A long orange beak. You anything?
No, they don't have a long beak. Gosh.
Yeah, killdeers, I've seen them for years.
Yeah, they have short beaks. I mean, there's they're
this bird
go was ahead.
More the size of a chicken. It was a pretty good sized bird. It like a small chicken.
Yeah, so they weren't herons or egrets or bitterns or anything like that.
I don't know what has an orange bill that would be in a long orange bill.
Jeez, I'm blanking because I need to hear more of the feathers. What Go through the feathers again. What color was the dominant feathering?
Okay, they were black, light colored brown, a medium colored brown, almost black. And so there was probably about 30 of them in that barred edge. Let me ask you a question. Okay. Even though they're shorebird, could they have been, swept up here by a storm or anything?
No, not that far, and probably they wouldn't stay in a group like that. There's a lot of common snipe that they'll be around bar ditches. They look just like the grass. Their bill's not orange. I'm wondering if it was not a shorebird. Maybe it was one of the wading birds and not a shorebird, mm-hmm. but I don't know. Maybe someone listening is going to know what it is, but you've stumped the chump for a moment. So I don't know what you saw, Randy. But definitely not oyster catchers.
I'm positive it had the orange beak about 3 or 4 inches long.
Yeah.
Because it was so odd to see something like that here. I'd never seen anything like that here, you know. And I don't know.
I'm racking my brain. All I can say is just steer away from oyster catcher. There are very few inland records, and if there were to be any, it would be singles, and they wouldn't be that far inland. Your straight line miles, you're probably 240 miles from the Gulf.
Yeah, I am.
I'm guessing. 241 is what my final answer is.
Uh-huh.
So that's a long, long way to get blown inland. Now, it has happened with larger birds that glide, like pelicans and frigate birds, but not an oyster catcher. And oyster catchers don't migrate across interior part of the U.S. They're pretty much sticking to the coast
They don't flock either.
I've never seen a group of more than probably six. I'm not an oyster catcher expert, but I've never seen a 20 or a 30. No way. So they're usually in pairs. They usually maintain a territory probably year round. So I don't know, but I just think if it was more like the grass and mud color and the bill was long, but I wouldn't call it orange. I think the snipe again is that's a real species. We hear about people going on snipe hunts and they think it's a joke, but look up common snipe. That could be it. It's a shorebird with a super long bill, but orange. I mean, orange is, if we're talking like UT, Austin, pumpkin or pumpkin orange. I mean, there's not a lot of birds with that kind of bill color. So
that's what caught my eye to begin with. I said, golly, a bird with an orange beak.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Hallucinating.
Well, go back sometime and you and your kid have a camera phone ready and try to snap a picture.
Yeah.
And that would help. Even fuzzy pictures help.
I had to meet someone right away, so I was only gone a short time. And when I came back, I said, I'm taking pictures. But no, they were gone.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for the call, Randy.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. 8502. Maybe those birds were cowboy fans. You never know.
Maybe then they wouldn't have orange if they
no,
were cowboy.
No, but they flew up.
Blue.
They flew up with some oysters to watch the
games. Oh yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, we're going next. Oh Lord, have mercy. We're going next to David from Nacogdoches and John from Fishville. Please stay on the line, David. What's your question tonight?
That's me. Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure I can identify these birds. They were cardinals, and I've always seen like groups of cardinals, two, maybe three in a group, four maybe sometimes, and they've always been young birds. But these birds they came into my carport. They were a couple, and they were real old. They were like fading. I've never seen cardinals with gray feathers and real, and they acted real rickety and everything. And and one landed, and then it was a male. I could tell it was a male, and then the female landed right next to him. And they started looking around. You know, my carport has, you know, cobwebs sometimes around the edges and stuff. They were looking up to see if they could find any bugs, and the female spotted one and then looked at the male, and the male looked up and spotted the same bug. And so he flew up, got the bug, brought it back, and fed it to her.
Okay.
And then the male flew over to another section, and the female flew over next to him, and they did the same thing. It's like they were a real couple. It's amazing, you know.
Well,
I mean, they were really old.
No,
you know?
No, old doesn't work with birds.
No,
no, that's a mammalian thing. You can look at a chimp, and it looks old. You can look at a Labrador; it's got a gray beard, but you can't do that with birds. They're molting their feathers once or twice a year. They're getting fresh plumage once or twice a year, depending on the species. So, a rickety old bird would never survive. It would never make it to Tuesday.
Well, they were acting old.
Well, what you described did not even sound like cardinals. Cardinals are going to be eating seeds and fruits. They're not going to come into your garage, your carport, looking for bugs. You described more of a Carolina wren. And so that's a different bird. And maybe when we hang up, look up Carolina wren. They're insectivorous. They're curious. They go into tool sheds, open garages, carports, and all along our house. I see them probing in our screen, over our windows, looking for bugs. And so I'm sorry, just didn't sound like cardinal.
Well, they had faded red feathers.
Well, now there's two things that can cause fading in birds, and that's wear. That's going to be wear and tear, so that'll soon pass when they molt. And sometimes diet can impact the color. But it's, you know, the male, you can't beat the red. Even a faded one is still red.
Yeah.
It's not gray, it's not orange, okay. It's always red. But right now we've got, I've counted 14 cardinals, males and females, in a couple of shrubs that are in the same view out the same window in our backyard right now. They really get together in big groups. I've seen in the field flocks of 30 plus cardinals all together. So they gather up in groups in the winter, but here comes spring around the corner, and boy, they get territorial, hormones are flowing, and they segregate back into pairs evenly instead of in these winter flocks. But no, David, what you described did not sound very cardinal-esque at all. So look up the Carolina wren, and maybe that's your bird. And if not, take a picture and call us next time, okay?
Okay. Now, I have one more quick question, okay?
Okay.
I saw this this bird in this brush, and it had the back of it was all white. It was like a big splotch of white on it. And it flew up like a quail, you know, really fast.
Okay.
And I had no idea what it was. Do you have any idea? Are there any? It was a fairly large bird, and it was like somebody had just thrown paint, white paint, on the back of it.
Well, the bird we profiled not 10 minutes ago, we talked about the northern flicker. And when you flush one, they have a big white rump patch, and that's all you really see. So it could have been the flicker that feeds on the ground, and you flushed it, and the white is what you see. Now, meadowlarks, they'll be in a grassland setting. They can show a little flash of white in the tail, but it's not very prominent. So if you're talking prominent white patch, I bet it's coincidentally the bird we just profiled a few minutes ago, the northern flicker.
This northern bird flicker is almost as big as a chicken.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've seen little chickens, little hens.
Yeah.
Yep. So size is very difficult to judge in the field. Yeah. It's really hard to look way over there and say that's small, medium, or large. So that's tricky to do. You know, unless it flew up from the edge of, you know, there's a soda can on the side of the road or a pine cone or something of known size or something you go up and look at and see how long that pine cone was. But no, size, and back to your thing about aging, these are difficult things to do in the field, David. It's just not done. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
Right.
Thanks for the call.
Much.
All right. And thank you. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Sandy from Shreveport, regarding David's question, thought that the bird that you might not have been able to identify might have been a black-bellied duck. She says they have orange beaks,
too. That's a good one. Black-bellied whistling duck. That's correct. I mean, that's a good guess. They have bright reddish-pink bills. They're not long, not shorebird long, so... That was Randy from Cleburne. So Randy, okay, if you're still listening, look up black-bellied whistling duck. That's a good guess. And they, you know, they have a long neck. They don't look like a squatty duck. They're very different looking. So, but that's a good one from Sandy. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. And we've got one more caller online, and line's open. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds or our avian world are welcome. We go next to John from Fishville. John, what's your question?
Well, we're busy tonight, aren't we?
Yes.
We like it that way.
Yeah. Okay. A little off. My question's kind of crazy. We've had about four or five dogs picked up by birds. And one of them actually was an eagle that got a fairly nice-sized dog. It's about 15 or 20 years ago. But now I've got a neighbor, a friend of mine, that's got a little tiny dog, and he's afraid to let her run loose out here on our place for fear of one of these birds getting her and hauling her away. And I told him, look, you can get this little harness. You can have a thing on the top of that harness. It might be a little flag or something that will keep that hawk or whatever it is from attacking that little dog. Now, am I right or not?
Well, yes and no. So toy dogs, if you have a dog that doesn't weigh but 5 or 6 pounds, you're in trouble. And you better keep it in your arms, obviously not when it's trying to go to the bathroom. But it's not just birds you've got to worry about. You've got to worry about the neighbor's dogs. You've got to worry about coyotes and bobcats if you let them out at night. You've got owls, but it's not just birds. So if you didn't see a bird fly off with those dogs, John, you're assuming. And so you didn't see it. And let me tell you, we have learned a lot with game cameras. People assume something, and then all of a sudden the game camera shows that they've got a mammalian predator in the neighborhood, like a bobcat or a coyote. And most neighborhoods across the country have those critters, whether you know it or not. So I would assume these are some of the potential predators, but I would never pinpoint that it was a hawk or eagle or owl without witnessing it. But so if your dog, I don't know what the cutoff is for bird. If your dog, if you've got a 15-pound dog, you're way okay. So, but this is the problem with people that want to own a toy dog. They have to watch out for everything. You know, that little dog thinks he's a big dog, and here comes the neighbor's dog that is a big 60 or 80 pound dog, and there's no contest. Right. And then you've got neighbors that like to grab a little toy dog and keep it for themselves. Oh, it's so cute and adorable. And that's another thing game cameras have caught, are pictures of neighbors stealing toy dogs. So the key with a toy dog is to just... You got to baby it 24/7, and if you want to let it out, put it in a enclosure that's got walls and a roof. Right. That way, Mr. Coyote, Mr. Raptor cannot get in there and get it. And so it's very time consuming to have such a dog. If you've got a 60-pound, 80-pound lab, you're good to go. You got no problems like what we're talking about. But if you got a Yorkie or a Chihuahua or a Pomeranian, look out. You are 24/7 bodyguard. It's like watching West Wing and looking at all the bodyguards the president and his staff have. That's what you are going to be, and you're not going to get paid for it. So,
yeah.
All right, John. Well, thank
you. Let me give you another,
okay.
Real quick.
Okay.
I don't have any backup on us right now. I got pigeons from up north. A cousin of mine, or a nephew of mine, brought them down 10, 15 years ago, about 25 pigeons, and he said they were tumblers.
Okay.
Or rollers. I don't recall.
Yep.
Now, what they do, and we've got about 20 of them, and they flip backwards. They don't roll. Now, is that a tumbler or a roller?
That's a domestic pet pigeon issue. I don't deal with that. You'll have to ask.
Oh, come on.
I know. You could Google that. I've heard tumbler is the term I've heard, and I've seen them. I when I grew up in the Metroplex, the neighbor across the street had some, and he'd let them out every day, and they would do that. They would get up really high, and all of a sudden it looked like somebody shot them, and they just would drop a little bit, and they'd tumble. So it's just a domestic bird thing. I don't deal with dogs, cats, or domestic pigeons, so sorry.
Okay, Cliff.
All right, thanks for the call, John.
Yeah, hang in there, buddy.
Thank you.
You're doing great work.
Thank you.
Bye.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now. All lines are open, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And I was just thinking, in Florida, you also got to watch out for gators, and they'll go after larger dogs, 40, 50, 60 pounds, you know.
So, I didn't even mention that, and we've talked about that. The teal season for duck hunters is in September when things are very warm and ducks, teal are coming in and alligators are available or out and about. And so the really smart duck hunter doesn't bring the dog on those teal hunts.
Not at all. Smart duck hunter doesn't get in the water with those gators either.
Because
you might, they're not going to come after you unless you disturb their nest. And
That's
the problem. So,
but in the dead of winter, like January, like now, if they are out and about, they're pretty darn sluggish and people will encounter them, but they're not very quick. So be careful with gators. That's true.
Cliff, we got a little lull here. You have an announcement to make, you wanted to speak to this.
Yeah, the president of the Louisiana Ornithological Society reached out, John Dillon, and he asked for us to do a shout-out for the LOS winter meeting that's coming up this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And there are two evenings of virtual meetings that are free. And he was pretty excited to announce that. And so if you're interested, they're free Zoom calls, and you can register to get the meeting login code. And just go to losbird.org. Again, losbird.org for Louisiana Ornithological Society. There's a presentation on Thursday evening at 7 by David Muth, and this Friday at 7 p.m. by Dr. Ted Floyd. So go to losbird.org for more information if you want to participate in a free Zoom call with the Ornithological Society of Louisiana. So,
all right. And you're listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. Lines are open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we have Louise from Shreveport online now. Louise, what's your question?
Hey, Cliff and Bill, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say that somebody just introduced me to your show a couple months ago, and I've been a new birder in the past year, and I've really enjoyed listening. I've learned a lot from you, and I probably have a lot of things I'd like to ask you, but for now, do you know there's an eagle cam for a nest in Shreveport? And I think that they should probably hatch their eggs probably next week. Well, I'm a teacher, and we've been keeping the camera on all day.
Cool.
We kind of just keep an eye on them.
Uh-huh.
And they brought a turtle into the nest today.
Yep.
And I think the dang turtle is still alive. It seemed like it's been burrowing in there. I just wonder.
I think if he's been up there a few cold nights, that's a problem for him. Up in the nest, if he's been picked at for a while, I don't think he's still alive.
Well, he arrived this afternoon.
Actually. Okay.
He keep it on. Yeah, okay. All day. I was just wondering if it was food they didn't want or decoration or.
No, he's probably got, you know, ahead of the game, brought dinner home at 3 p.m. and it's not time to eat yet. So, but there was a nest down near Sam Rayburn Dam that I knew about, and I went underneath it, and I was astounded at how many turtle shells there were and. Catfish skulls, and those were the two dominant bones in the bone pile underneath were turtles. I can't tell turtle shells apart, you know, when they're just muddy and dark looking, but I'm a herpetologist could, but I was very interested to see that there was probably 15 turtle shells under the and who knows how many have been picked up and hauled off by another, you know, a scavenger. But yeah, so they'll eat turtles, they'll eat fish. They will eat birds. Bald eagles will go into rafts of ducks, coots, et cetera, and get a little bit of bird meat as well. So they're pretty opportunistic and they eat just about anything around the water's edge. So, well, cool. What grade are you teaching, Louise?
First, second, and third.
Oh, that's a great age. Especially
curiosity one.
Yeah, especially for an eagle cam. That's great that you have that on. So have you been doing in school or virtual or how's that been going?
We're in school.
Good, good. And that's good that the kids can see that eagle cam. So, they're, you know, these southern birds nest so much sooner than northern birds. So if you find yourself finishing up the nest here in Shreveport, you might start Googling for Iowa and Minnesota. And as you go farther north, those birds are going to be a little far behind us. So I'm just saying you might get more eagle nest cams to get you deeper into the spring semester.
We like this because this is nearby.
Oh, yeah. That makes it really special that's a neighborhood. That's your hood bird. So, yeah, pretty cool. Well, good. Well, I'm glad to hear you're introducing your kids to eagle cams. I'm glad you found out about this bird show. So, Louise, what were you doing before you found out? You said your friend told you about bird calls. Your life was not the same, was it?
It wasn't the same. It's definitely better now.
I'm messing with you. Yeah. So, well, good. Well, keep up the good work. We need teachers like you teaching our kids about nature and have some respect and love for critters around them. So thank you so much for what you do.
Okay, appreciate you.
Thank
guys.
You.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. And yes, all phone lines are open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. In the meantime, we have had some submissions. And we're going to go to some audio that one of our callers or listeners submitted. Tom H. Put this audio together. He wasn't really sure what he was hearing. He thought it might be an owl, and he just wanted to confirm.
Yeah, that's some of the incessant begging of a great horned owl. This one seems a little more than normal. Maybe it's a true young bird in the nest. I don't know when he recorded it or if he did last year. Doesn't matter.
This was in December of 20.
Okay, so it's that seems a little early for a young bird to be hatched. When they fledge, even great horned owls in the summer, their first summer of life, they're out of the nest. They seem to be, you know, on their own, but they'll still beg for food and make that whiny call like that. And a lot of people hear it. So, if you hear that sound at night and it's up in the trees, it's a great horned owl. It's begging. It's hungry. It wants mom and dad to feed it. So
there you go.
Yeah.
That's how I sound every morning. You're listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to get to our next caller in just a moment, but Angela Bratton submitted two images here, and we want to get to these real quick because they've been sitting in the hopper here for a month or so.
Yeah, so if you go to the bird calls page at redriverradio.org, you'll see Bill's got for this month. We've got some pictures. They're kind of fuzzy. The first one's super fuzzy of the same bird. There's a fence and something flying over it, but if you scroll down, there is it's a young red-tailed hawk sitting in the tree. If you keep scrolling, there's a leucistic American goldfinch, which is really cool looking. It's just got a little flavor of yellow in the face and a little bit of black in the wing, but the rest of the bird is very white, so that's a striking looking bird. These are pictures submitted. So another one came from Chuck Omi. Chuck's a longtime listener. He's the one that we had on the air last
mm-hmm.
month.
Yep.
So he sent a really cool picture of a great blue heron with a, boy, that's a full meal deal size fish. I mean, I hope he can get that down. That great blue heron can swallow that, because great blues don't cut food up like we do with a knife and a fork. They swallow it whole. And then scrolling down, there's a little bird at a seed feeder, and that's the white-breasted nuthatch coming to the feeder. And then scrolling down some more, person, Steve Gunner, submitted a little brown bird underneath his feeder on the ground and wondered what it was. And it was coincidentally the bird we profiled in December. This is an Inca dove. So what's the chances? Okay, and scrolling down, there's some snow-covered trees with some bright red male cardinals sitting in the tree that Steve also submitted, and I think that's it,
yep.
Right? Yep.
And snow-covered tree, that must have been a very rare day here.
Yeah, we got 4.5 inches in Nacogdoches. Yep. It hit January 10th and 11th through the night. Started about 4 or 5 p.m., and fell through the night, and boy, the next morning was beautiful. My wife and I, we went outside late that night, and we quickly ran back in after, well, we walked 2 blocks, but yeah. we got to thinking, we are hearing a cracked limb about every 20 seconds. And in the distance or close by, and you'd see a, you know, limb break, maybe 3-foot limb break with, because the snow was so heavy. And it was on anything that was green that still had leaves or needles. So loblolly was real vulnerable. Live oak, laurel cherry, cherry laurel, those were vulnerable. And so, yeah, we were amazed at how many cracked limbs. And then the next day it looked like a hurricane hit.
Yeah.
Power was out for a good bit of our area. Internet was out in our house for 2 days. Kids were home for school. They didn't even do distance learning for 2 days because nobody could, you know, there were a lot of people without power and internet. And so it was pretty amazing. So we didn't have anything like that for probably 9 or 10 years.
Yeah, it had been, I think, since I had moved here, because my first winter here, I had to be outside cleaning out the dish. Although I do think we got clogged up with some dish work this time as well. But we were able to work around it real quick because when the snow lands on the dish, it blocks out the signal that we have to use. So anyways, a lot of technical stuff. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. We did have a caller call in a question. A caller from Jefferson wants to know, she says she had seen grackles in the parking lot in Florida. Now she is seeing them in parking lots here. She has heard that grackles eat other songbird eggs. Is this true? And if so, how can we get rid of them?
Well, you're not going to get rid of them. So grackles eat a lot of things, bird eggs being probably a small portion, partly because it's seasonal, but we're not going to get rid of great-tailed grackles. They got here on their own. They're not released. They are a product of urbanization. They in Texas, they were restricted to South Texas until the late 40s, early 50s. And when the U.S. changed from a rural and agrarian system to an urban system, urban culture in the 50s, boy, the great-tailed grackle exploded. So they moved with lawns, highways, and pavement and rooftops. So when that grew, starting in the 50s, the great-tailed grackle moved inland. We can see that with records. You can see when they showed up in San Antonio. Then you can see when they showed up in Dallas-Fort Worth area. and now they're way up into Oklahoma and way beyond. But we're not going to get rid of them. They're in the tens of millions. And so you find out they eat bird eggs, but guess what? We have lots of cardinals still. We have lots of mockingbirds. We have lots of things killing our birds that we've created, you know, windows, letting our cats out. So if you're really worried about bird deaths, we need to look in the mirror. And I wouldn't look at a great-tailed grackle, because the things that we're doing are having a much, much heavier toll than hungry great-tailed grackles.
So, and they do clean up the Walmart parking lot.
They sure do. Yep. And they're noisy. And
yes.
Yeah.
You are listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Sharon from Shreveport is on. Sharon, what's your question?
Hi. I had a question about hummingbirds. So this last year... Well, in the last 2 years, we've been putting out hummingbird feeders. And this last summer, we noticed something just bizarre to
okay.
us.
Okay.
It seemed like we've always had a nesting couple, I guess, of hummingbirds that would come and feed. But this year, it was so crazy because it seemed like there were lots of hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And they would fight and all... patio turned into a war zone.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is there something we can do to kind of make that not so terrible?
Yeah. So what you described is a September thing. It can get going in August. Usually peters out in October, but September is the peak. We sometimes see it again in the spring. If we're talking about ruby-throated hummingbird, that's the dominant hummingbird in your area, Sharon. They start showing up at this latitude around March 18th, somewhere in that ballpark. So you can sometimes see some big numbers in April, May, but nothing like September. So what you can do is just duplicate, triplicate the number of feeders and spread them out. Put one in the front yard, put one in the backyard, put one in
that's
the side yard.
That's what I thought to do.
Yeah.
I thought I would ask.
Yeah, and that way, if you have one or two bullies, they can't really bully more than one feeder because they can't get there. They can't see them at the same time because you got the house kind of being a block. Now, don't put things too close to the windows of the house. So
okay.
When we say use the front yard, backyard, make sure it's many meters away from any window, because if something scares the bird on the other side, not the glass side, but on the other side of the bird, it could fly towards the glass, hit it, and die as it's fleeing from a predator or another hummingbird. So
uh-huh.
keep your feeder far from glass. I know that there's some companies that sell feeders that attach to glass. I would never do it. I've seen what glass can do. Birds just don't figure out glass. They've never figured it out. They will never figure it out. Then glass is another thing I didn't mention earlier, of something that humans are doing that's a major killer birds, collisions with glass. It's just run multiple feeders. Again, it'd be a fall thing. September is the big month, and people love it. I love it. We can see a dozen hummingbirds or more at our feeder. And it's every day is different. And because these are southbounders, they're the males and the females and the young of the year, and they're tanking up as they go south.
I was surprised with how vicious they are for being so tiny. Will they actually kill each other?
No, they're not going to. No, they're just bullies. They don't kill each other. I've seen injuries that are assumed to be from another hummingbird. You can see on rare occasion a hummingbird with a dud eye that probably could have gotten poked by another hummingbird, but. You'll see them battling and even, you know, tied up together and battling to the ground, but it's not to the death. It's not a duel to the death. It's just a tough guy thing. Females, too, do it. But, you know, hummingbirds do this in the wild. Sometimes nectar giving plants are in short supply. And so a bird has to protect that cupboard, that refrigerator, so to speak, and all the food therein, and so they that's their shrub. So another thing to do, Sharon, that I always recommend in addition to putting out a feeder is to wildscape and to dedicate part of your yard. Start small, and when you fall in love with it, you'll grow your wildscape.
We grow a lot of trumpet flowers.
Yes, trumpet flowers.
Yep. And all those kinds of things. And we got a lot going on as far as that goes.
Good.
But that was the first time that we put out the hummingbird feeder, and we didn't realize that it was going to be just – and I only put a little bit, and I refill it every day so that it's not – it doesn't get old and gross,
yep.
That sugar water. But they went crazy. It was wild. We couldn't even sit on our patio.
What did you do this fall with your feeder? Did you take it down or did you leave it up?
No, we kept it up.
Good.
Up until I think the beginning of December, when we basically kept it up until we stopped seeing.
Yeah.
Hummingbirds.
Well,
I know that with them coming south, that sometimes we'll see them into December, but.
We have overwintering hummingbirds, so you will be you would be rewarded often if you leave your feeder up year round. It's an old wives' tale that says if you don't take your feeder down by Halloween, they're not going to leave. That's malarkey. These birds are hardwired to go south. They will do it. It has nothing to do with your feeder. You're not that special. I'm not that special. My feeder's not that special. So leave your feeder up. And actually, I got an email in the last week or two from a listener in Pollock, Texas, who has a hummingbird. And she said that she didn't know about keeping it up till she listened to bird calls. She left her feeder up, and boom, she got a hummingbird. And I'm happy to say that she and her husband named the bird Little Cliff after me.
Oh,
so I thought that was funny because I'm certainly bigger than any hummingbird on the planet. So I'm Big Cliff. That bird was Little Cliff. So keep your feeder up year round, Sharon, and thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. And Cliff, we have just time to get in your conservation tips. So go ahead and give us what you got.
Okay, tonight we're going to end with reusable plastics. You've probably heard the expression reduce, reuse, and recycle when referring to minimizing what goes into our garbage and the local landfill. A Bird Calls conservation tip from nearly 2 years ago talked about the benefits of recycling much of our familiar garbage like glass, plastic, paper, and cardboard. It's also easy to reduce and reuse. Instead of grabbing a plastic water bottle or straw every time you want to drink, use a refillable water bottle and washable drinking straw. Buy some reusable cloth grocery bags to cut down on all those plastic grocery bags that have one-time use and end up as trash in the landscape or blowing around in our waterways. By using these items, you'll be saving money and keeping the environment a lot healthier. Avoid single-use items and invest in a few reusable items. Do it for the birds.
All right, and I want to thank Cliff once again for joining us and being our resident ornithologist.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
If you have a picture you want to send us, you can send it to my address at wbeckett@lsus.edu. You've been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio and the state ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. We'd like to thank everybody at Texas Parks and Wildlife for their help with this program. Tonight's program was made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Bird Calls is produced by Bill Beckett and Cliff Shackelford, and the phone bank was handled by Wally Derleth. Tonight's sounds were featured by Ian Cruikshank. He was the recorder for Xenocanto.com, and James Childress supplied our bird photo. We will be back with another edition of Bird Calls next month. This month's program will be up on our website in a short while, and we hope that you will join us for the next installment of Bird Calls on February 16th. You are listening to Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. This is KDAQ Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Camden Magnolia, KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore.